Opinions, comments made on the Serotalk podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle. www.serotalk.com, a production of Serotalk Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access mobile network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 66 for April 25, 2011. This is Michael Loft.
I'm Ricky Enger.
And I'm Joe Steinkamp.
Well, well, well. A lot of news to cover today. Right after we released our podcast, RFB and D went up and changed their name, and they are now Learning Ally. Or that's what I give when I'm listening to my speech synthesizer, learningally.org.
And you've done the same thing that many people have, and that is they listened to the synth and assumed that it was, in fact, A-L-L-E-Y. So much like Diagon Alley in Harry Potter, or yes, you can stumble down the Learning Alley, but it is, in fact, Ally. And there was a lot of controversy over the name change because RFB&D, a lot of people felt like that says exactly what they do. They're recordings for the blind and dyslexic. But if you look at the name and you are dyslexic, the B and the D can be a bit confusing. So that's actually insulting a large portion of your audience. And of course, the blind folks were concerned that Learning Ally would no longer be as focused on blindness. And I don't know that they have changed their focus at all. It's just that the blind population has never been exclusively their focus. They cater to a lot of other print disabled people as well. And I guess they just wanted a name that didn't necessarily single anybody out.
That's right. They said many users were neither blind nor dyslexic. So, and as you said, right, interchanging the B and D and having difficulty writing an ampersand. So anyway, it is now Learning Ally. And of course, they have videos and like they had the whole crew of The View, the show on ABC, doing shout outs for them. So I guess they got some good coverage and press on that as well. The NFB is seeking info on technology used by students, teachers, and administrators, K-12, universities, and colleges in the U.S. Basically, they're looking for accessibility barriers. Is technology either helping or hindering your education? And there's a survey there. They'd like as many people as possible to fill out.
Right. I think it is for a specific group. So if you are a student, a university administrator, a teacher, or a parent of a blind student, you can go and submit your two cents. They do have a section where you can define yourself as other, so it's not really clear if everyone can take the survey or if it's specifically for this group, but the description seems to say that they are looking for input from these particular types of people.
Yeah, students and parents and so forth. Ricky, dumb question, but they say there's no such thing. Other than what's in the name, what is the actual difference between a college and a university?
That is an interesting question, I think, and I could be wrong, but I think colleges can be 2 years or they can be vocational or what have you, whereas a university is generally a four-year or more institution. There's probably some other more profound difference, but I don't know what it is.
Okay, very good.
Now that we have displayed our ignorance.
That's right. You can email us at resources@serotalk.com and call us imbeciles or other names we've received. Well, students at Brigham Young University have created a Windows 7 tablet for under $1,500 that allows navigation via eye tracking. And this is exciting news because that comes in at one-fifth the price of a technology like the Tobii PCEye, spelled E-Y-E, that currently costs about $6,900.
And that's one of the cheapest on the spectrum. They've got something like the iGaze system, which can be upwards of $20,000 or whatever. The thing that I like about this story is that people are talking about how a system like this, obviously it may not be so useful to the blind, but in the mainstream, it would be another method of hands-free interaction. So assistive technology that ends up making its way into the mainstream, and that's always a good thing.
While the unemployment rate is the lowest it's been in 2 years, it's actually higher for persons with disabilities due to the fact that employers are requiring greater skill sets from their personnel. This story from NPR talks about this, and three other factors mentioned in the segment include the fear of litigation if they have to fire the person with a disability, the cost of installing special accommodations, and the discomfort over how they would, quote, deal with workers with a disability, end quote.
This goes back to the article that we discussed a couple of weeks ago, where people with disabilities are never going to be seen as employable until they are seen as a market. And clearly, businesses aren't at that point yet. They're still thinking of hiring a person with a disability as a big hassle, but something that they, you know, might do out of the goodness of their hearts, but they would have a lot to, quote, deal with. Yeah, that portion of the article really bothered me.
Yes, it did me as well. An article talking about how do you test for web accessibility that's more than just us blind folks sitting down and using our screen readers and seeing if the sites are doable. Also talks about how developers and designers should at least learn the basics of accessibility. Now, what I thought interesting and disturbing was all of these links that they posted, WebAIM and others. Basically, they're only using JAWS and NVDA to conduct their tests.
Yeah, there's nothing about using this on the Mac platform with VoiceOver and nothing about SA2Go, although that's certainly available for developers to create accounts and use. And we're back again to, if it's accessible with one screen reader, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's accessible to all, and vice versa. It could be inaccessible with a single screen reader and work just fine with others.
A related article talks about five different ways to ensure that your site is accessible to the visually impaired. An organization called Prevent Blindness America says 53.2 million Americans, 45 and over, have some form of visual impairment from mild to severe, and 18% of those are legally blind. 8% are about 1 in 12 males and 1 in 200 women are actually colorblind. And of course, you can read more about the five specific problems and the solutions you can take to make sure your websites reach the largest possible audience, that article, as all these over at SarahTalk.com. Mozilla, the makers of Firefox web browser, have launched the Aurora channel. Its purpose is to bring you the latest accessibility enhancements more rapidly. Firefox 4 was recently released, but they're on a mission to release one new version every quarter and plan to have Firefox 5 out by the end of June or the end of Q2. Well, if you like Julie, who's absolutely cool, you might just love the new voice, Sally. It's a female teenager voice, and it's coming very soon. And again, we have a demo of that over at SarahTalk.com. Now, I thought it was interesting, if you go back and listen to our CSUN coverage, where Craig Campbell with Ivona talked about their mission to bring out a variety of different voices, other ethnicities and, you know, teenagers and senior citizens, so that you can really get a diversity of voices. And it'll be interesting to see what the future of synthetic voices.
Yeah, agreed. It's we've had enough of the sort of 40-year-old, no accent, very deep-voiced female synths, and the Sally voice, the teenage voice, is actually quite nice. It doesn't sound as sugar-sweet, perky as Julie, so you don't necessarily want to punch the synth in the face. It is very cheerful, but it sounds natural to me as well.
I didn't really think of her as a teen. I kind of thought of her as early 20s, but maybe it's because I had her going through a subwoofer. But anyway,
yeah,
it sounds nice.
She doesn't sound quite like a teenager, does she?
No, not to me. Well, the FCC has set up its first ever national deaf-blind equipment distribution program. They've allocated $10 million toward the project, and each state will initially receive $50,000 for this pilot program that will attempt to give deaf-blind persons access not only to the internet, but other information and telecommunication services. I'm not really sure what $50,000 for a whole state, what it's going to buy, but it's a nice initiative and the first of many coming out with the 21st Century Telecommunications Program and legislation. Skype 5.3 has been released with accessibility enhancements. Now, don't ask me what those are because I really haven't seen any difference. I do know that the new 5.3 automatically includes in your contacts one of my favorite, most useful features of Skype, and that's Echo 123, the ability to call and hear how you sound. But also a new Skype is available for Android that opens up 3G calling to all U.S. carriers, as well as apparently fixes some major security bugs that were available in previous copies of Skype. Now, some folks who using it on Android told me in the Samnet chats that there were still some issues with dropped calls and so forth, so I don't know how much of that's been addressed in the very latest version of Skype, but hopefully all of you in the Android space are playing with Skype and seeing what it's made of.
Yeah, I didn't know that Skype wasn't open on 3G to all carriers, but apparently Skype and Verizon had a deal such that that functionality was exclusive to Verizon until recently.
Yeah, and someone told me they actually bought a phone with Skype already pre-installed, which I thought was interesting. Very interesting. Well, Google says within 10 years, we will be able to identify any item simply by submitting its picture. Now, Goggles for Android lets you snap a picture, and then it's sent to Google's servers, who will then tell the phone what the picture is, often taking less than 2 seconds to accomplish this. There are many items not currently recognized, and these include things like clothing, furniture, food, animals, trees, cars, and many everyday items, unpackaged items, things that I thought would be pretty easy to do, like purses and shoes and cell phones and things of that sort. But they are working on recognizing human faces. However, people will have the option to not allow themselves to be identified, which makes me wonder about if other people will be forced to be in that database, folks like criminals, sex offenders, things of that sort. But Ricky, what are your thoughts on that?
The sad thing about Google Goggles is that I can't speak to the usability of the app on Android, but we did, until very recently, have something called Noogle Noggles, which was an accessible UI for Google Goggles, which is not accessible on the iPhone, and now Noogle Noggles is no longer available either. So there's a whole group of blind people who could be providing very valuable data, because we actually use this all the time, whereas I would assume sighted folks don't have a need to, so they do it sort of just because. But now, at least on the iPhone, we're not able to do that because of the inaccessibility of the app.
Well, I have some good news and bad news. The good news is that CNN has come out with an app for the Android. The bad news is it's not accessible.
Oh. No.
What I'm curious about is there are several different options for using the Android operating system. You got Spiel, you got TalkBack, you got mobile accessibility. So is it inaccessible everywhere or just with a specific screen reader?
It's funny you should say that. We had that story a little bit ago about WebEx and which ones test well and which ones don't. And when you're using Android, you have the ability to do TalkBack or Spiel or Mobile Accessibility's Vocalizer. So when you're looking at something that you're looking to say, quote unquote, is it or is it not accessible, they do behave differently. There are some things that TalkBack will read in Facebook that others won't, and there are some things that Spiel reads a little differently that TalkBack doesn't do. Mainly the first one that I can really think of is TalkBack doesn't always tell you the order of a list, so it doesn't tell you that you're on 3 of 17, whereas Mobile Accessibility and Spiel do. I've got the CNN app. I played with it a little bit. There are some ads links in it that aren't spoken. So when you're actually arrowing down, if you go to, say, the tech area, and then you go through each tech story, the third and about the ninth link aren't spoken because those are actual links to ads, and you don't really know that they are that. It's not spoken. I visually can see them. But the other part that's really freaky is that if you do get to a story, it will read, but it reads very slowly. You don't have the ability to control. You don't have the ability to activate a link. You don't have the ability to move up and down in paragraphs. You open a story and it is self-read. And for Android, that's actually kind of good.
Is this with Spiel
I'm
or
using
mobile
Spiel.
Accessibility or what are you using?
Yeah, okay. I'm using Spiel.
Is there audio and video content involved?
There are links to some of the stories. Mostly right now, it's a tab order up at the top that you arrow back and forth with, and then that opens up kind of a tree view list below it. And then you just arrow down through them and click on stories, and then stories are read. They've updated it twice in the last week, so it's kind of hard to say because, again, when we're talking about testing, in the mobile space, the version that we're playing with now might not be the version that we get about a week from now. So at this time, they're still playing around with it, and I can use this, whereas I have a much harder time trying to use this on my iPad. Again, there's another one of those where the iPad is different than the one for Android completely. Same thing works like that for, say, the TED Talks app or even Conan O'Brien's Team Coco app. I can actually use it a lot better in Android than I can on my iPad.
Maybe another reason to have both. Yeah, keep swapping the SIM cards. Well, apparently also inaccessible is the Navigon GPS app for Android. I know the price fluctuates right now. It's $58.16. But if you want access to Navigon on Android, you can email android@navigon.com and ask for that. I guess my question, I'm wondering why Navigon is needed. I looked at the description. I'm wondering what can you not do that's built into the native Google GPS. But maybe Mike Calvo or someone can email us resources@serialtalk.com and explain. I'm just kind of curious about that.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, especially...
We'll test it again in San Diego. Yeah,
considering that Joe and I actually had dueling GPSs at CSUN, I was using TomTom, which the functionality of TomTom is comparable to Navigon. There are just some UI differences that make Navigon a little more appealing to me. In any case, his free Google Maps turn by turn did pretty much what my $40-$50 app did.
I would imagine that it would probably be a little bit more of you could save things, or maybe you have the ability to do a little bit more of a focus, like points around you, points of interest, because I haven't really used the Google free version enough to be able to do POIs and things like that. So it could be that you could do a much more detailed search. But if you know where you were going, like we typed in the exact address and through Google Maps, or we did a search for names of things, like we were looking for a P.F. Chang's, we found that pretty easily. And then it became a dueling GPS race between Ricky and I and our poor driver having to listen to two versions of Samantha at the same time.
That's enough to stress anyone out.
Even one is bad enough.
In stereo. Well, in Apple land, it looks like Maury Hill... working with AI Squared is sharing many useful iPad accessibility tips. She mentions a 56-point font that you can use. Also, you can set up your triple-click home to switch between the three different accessibility options that are built in. And you can read about those and some other ideas she has for getting the most out of your iPad at serotalk.com. The latest iOS game that looks to be accessible and fun is called Stem Stumper. You are a vine, and you need to find fertilizer to help you grow. So you navigate around a garden, avoiding and destroying obstacles, and finding and eating fertilizer. Yum, yum.
This kind of makes me think of Plants vs. Zombies, but there's probably not a lot of similarity.
Yeah. No, that's a tower defense game where you have to defend a tower against different zombies coming in, and you actually do grow plants to fight them. Different plants attack zombies in different ways, but Stem Stumper is an evil game. I've been playing it for the last couple of nights. I threw it out on Twitter, you know, should I get it? And it's $1.99, which is a wonderful price for this. It's something that you can actually do while waiting for something. This is a great time killer in line or waiting in the doctor's office. The game also sports a sonar mode, and you can actually turn the screen off. So for what it is, it's really cool because you can actually teach other people how to approach things in a non-visual fashion, because there's the game that's actually visual and you can see it. And then you could also turn on voiceover because the game actually gives you prompts in voiceover and gives you really great descriptions on how to approach the game and the game mechanics.
Doesn't it interface with Game Center also?
Yeah, it actually does. It connects to the Game Center, which is kind of the Apple version of Xbox Live for those of you who are gamers out there. But what that generally means is a place like Facebook, a social place where you can actually challenge your friends, connect. You can actually keep track of their scores. They can keep track of yours. There's a list of achievements. So there's some things you can do within the game, like there are some angry acorns, and if you poke them 30 times, you actually get an achievement for that and points. Unfortunately, parts of Game Center are inaccessible at this time, but that could be easily rectified because there weren't a lot of games out there that were accessible to the blind that would actually necessitate a update to Game Center. But certainly this game and a couple others that are on the horizon that actually will make Game Center a really neat thing and a social area for us to challenge each other in iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch land. But I highly recommend this for $199. It's a great game, and I find myself playing it until 3 in the morning, and also trying to get other people to play it with sonar mode, because there's actually one of these achievements to play the game completely with the screen in sonar mode, and by that I mean there is no visuals. So it's a great way, again, to get people to try it and see what it's like to be visually impaired while having fun.
Reuters reports that the iPhone 5 will be released in September, possibly delayed from the earthquake and tsunami in Japan, but whatever the reason, it looks like production will go into effect in July, and we'll have the new big bad iPhone 5 around September, 3 months later than we had the 3GS and the 4. A new class action lawsuit takes issue with three games for the iPhone that allow in-app purchases, alleging that these apps make it easy for children to rack up credit card charges without realizing that they are spending real-world money. Basically, the concept is you get free games that charge in-app purchases for virtual goods. So this lawsuit does acknowledge that Apple has since addressed the issue by requiring a password for in-app purchases. Previously, the way this was set up is you had a 15-minute window during which you could make additional purchases without having to re-enter your password.
But that's how it's set up now. Previously, they didn't have any sort of restriction on in-app purchases. I don't think you had to enter your password, and that's since been changed. But, you know, people in this class action lawsuit want their money back. Unfortunately, some people are still saying that's still not enough. Requiring a password isn't enough because some minors know the password for purchasing apps. And my response to that is, and how did they find out? If you're going to let your minor have a password to purchase apps, you have to be prepared for the consequences of that.
Yeah, this is certainly changing the playing field where, you know, one password allows you access to the credit card and the bank account. So it's going to be curious to see where that goes. Probably the biggest news, though, in Apple land, a lot of upset folks, a lot of Twitter buzz. Security researchers have discovered that Apple's iOS 4 operating system found on iPad and iPhone also keeps a log of users' locations and saves this data to a file on the device. The data is restored through the iTunes backup process and across devices. Researchers say that the data backup basically is intentional. They've contacted Apple and have received no response from the company. The file is unencrypted and unprotected. Basically, it can be found on any machine that is synced with an iOS device. And basically, if your phone falls in the wrong hands, they can retrieve this file. They believe it has a whole year of tracking data. Basically, it logs longitude and latitude coordinates. And basically, it's a file called consolidated.db. So we probably have not heard the last of that yet.
No, not at all. They've been collecting this apparently since the release of iOS 4. What's interesting is this wasn't recently discovered. It just happened to recently make the news. A few months ago, someone else discovered this.
Apple has changed the way they rank apps. Instead of just looking at the number of downloads, they now look at usage patterns. And I think this is a great idea, but basically this benefits apps that are used over and over again, like Facebook, Pandora, Netflix, and maybe even things like iBlink Radio, where it's not just the number of downloads, but how many times are users launching the app?
That's right. Of course, some people are concerned about, I don't want Apple knowing how many times I've used such and such an app, but this is aggregate data. You know, I don't think anybody is looking at you in particular and saying, oh, you loaded Pandora 4 times today.
Well, apparently Google did the same thing earlier this year, I think in the month of April. And it can certainly also be helpful in determining what's hot and currently popular. I think that's very important because the way we use the apps changes so often. So I think it's a good thing, and it's within their terms of service. They're not doing anything illegal. Well, sometimes uninstalling a program from Windows 7, Vista, or even XP doesn't in and of itself do the trick, but an article we have linked to at serotalk.com shows you how to truly remove not only iTunes, QuickTimes, but those other mean and nasty components that kind of come along with it. In Sero Talk stuff, it looks like Tech Chat 97, Ricky Inger demos DSP for the Mac, good old DocuScan Plus.
Yes, indeed. And it has been submitted to the App Store. We should hopefully be seeing approval soon. Also in that tech chat, we had Steve Sauzin and Scott Rakowski and
Robert Carter and David Woodbridge all shared their favorite Apple applications. Then we went into Tech Chat 98 with Rick Harmon and Byron Lee. They shared their favorite, and along with yours truly, Michael Loff, we shared our favorite Windows software. That was a great discussion, and we covered a lot of different categories there.
Well, Michael, you've got something interesting coming up in May, right? You get to go speak to the good folks at the International Association of Audio Information Services.
That's right. They're having a conference in St. Louis this year, May 12th through the 14th, and I'll be covering using iBlink Radio. Basically, what the organization is, I should mention first, is basically the various radio reading services out there. So we want to talk about a variety of things of, you know, how to reach new potential clients, how to help them save money by eliminating the need to purchase radios when they can use the internet, you know, expanding their coverage area using social networking, Twitter and Facebook and WordPress blogs and things of that sort to let people know that they even exist and help them raise money because a lot of government funding is being cut right now. And maybe one of the biggest things is RSS feeds because they have so many great readers and they read some really excellent stuff, but it gets lost because if you don't hear it live, you know, it's gone with the wind. So I'm very excited about that. And we're excited that almost all of them now have adopted and let us have international distribution of their content via iBlink Radio. We're very excited about that. Well, blind folks love their Dropbox. So if you use Dropbox, we just want to encourage you to be careful with what you share, because actually now every day 25 million people share over 200 million files, and the new terms of service basically say that they will share the data upon request if asked for by the government, including decrypting the files. So, as the old saying goes, you have been warned.
Indeed. If you're sharing illegal stuff and you didn't realize that this could be tracked, it can be.
Well, this is something we've talked about a few times. If you've never seen before and you suddenly regained your eyesight or maybe got it for the first time in your life, would you actually know what you are seeing?
Turns out you would not.
Yeah, but it's actually good news. It says while you would not within the first few days, that very likely within a week, most people should begin to be able to coordinate things that they've felt in their hands for years with what they're actually seeing with their eyes. So there would just be an initial adjustment period. So that's really good news. But I always remember the story of Michael May talking about skiing and then having to close his eyes because his brain was seeing so much data that he would have crashed. I mean, it was just overwhelming his mind because he'd done it without eyesight. Well, here's one we can rejoice in. If you are a geek but have not always been proud of it, fear no more, because at serotalk.com we found an article, 8 Reasons Why Geeks Are Better Lovers. So remember, geek is a 5-letter word. Take your pick. M-O-N-E-Y.
You got it.
L-O-V-E-R. Whatever makes you feel good. Ricky, would you replace your cane or a dog with a pair of haptic shoes?
I might, assuming they weren't large and cumbersome and they got to match my suit, you know?
Well, exactly. And there's so many shoe sizes and everything. But researchers in India have developed these haptic shoes that basically use Google Maps GPS data retrieved from an Android device along with an Arduino Bluetooth device to basically send communications to your shoes. Or the final product will actually have motors that kind of go left, right, you know, up, down. But again, folks,
yeah,
this is...
Yeah, they'll vibrate at you.
Yeah, they'll vibrate. But this, again, folks, when you ask why we have so much passion and interest in Android, we can never focus on one technology. We must promote all forms of innovation. And so we can't let the initial shortcomings of Android cloud our view of its potential to improve the quality of life.
And Ricky will accessorize with the vibrating glasses. So what? She'll have her glasses with her shoes.
I was thinking then, about that. Then, you would have the glasses and the hard hat and the big duct tape thing strapped to you. And then maybe the shoes will have this, like, you know, click your heels together 3 times for the take me home function or whatever. But I think this is... I think this is a neat concept because it doesn't seem that cumbersome. Having something vibrate on your feet, I don't think that would be terribly distracting. I kind of like it.
Only if it comes in ruby red.
Yes.
Right. If it's just an Android phone and a Bluetooth you keep in your pocket and you've got shoes that don't look too tacky, it sounds much better than the hard hat and glasses and I don't know. Well, as of April 17th, it looks like Verizon Wireless ended their one-year contracts. They said, no big deal. Most users want 2 years anyway to save money on the phones. Yeah, it's because they don't offer you one-year options. You have to ask for those, of course. But anyway, users will still have the month-to-month and prepaid options available to them. Researchers at the University of Southern California think they may be able to treat blindness by replacing damaged retina cells with similar algae cells.
Yeah, this sounds bizarre, but
that's right. Got your algae in your eyes.
Algae in your eyes. Yes, that does. It sounds very strange, but I guess they can make this algae grow to kind of mimic retinal cells. So whatever it takes, I guess.
Well, algae is sensitive to light. That's its natural characteristics. But the technique has worked in mice, and they believe human trials could begin within 2 years. And because blind folks love their phones, you can read about 4 free conference calling services over at serotalk.com. Love those old phone groups. If you can't get enough with internet chat, Skype, Ventrilo, and TeamTalk, and SamNet chat, you can always do the old school teleconferencing services, and a lot of folks like that because there are still some folks who are not online, or it's a great way to communicate in different groups. But you can read that article at serotalk.com. Well, this has come up more than once in our voice chat. I've also seen it on email lists, but kind of the concept of how we as blind folks polish and clean our shoes and keep them looking as good as possible. But interesting article talking about removing mud and dirt from your shoes by using a pencil. That's right, taking the eraser end of it for larger areas and then the sharpened pencil end for smaller spots. And you can also read from this a link on 56 uses for the common pencil at serotalk.com. So blind folks who think pencils are useless,
Think again.
Well, our final story here before we go into our segments. Blind girl Jasmine Alvarez has one simple request. Well, perhaps it's not that simple, because actually, she has tried for over the last year to accomplish one thing. She just wants to meet Justin Bieber.
Aw, it's so cute.
So she wrote a song and posted it to YouTube, and now there's over 4,000 people who have joined her cause to help her meet Justin Bieber. So I wish her good luck.
Yep, and this thing totally went viral.
Yeah, it went very viral, and I'm just excited to see anyone, you know, set out a goal and accomplish it. I don't know, Jasmine, you might scare poor Justin when you, that line in there about what you want to do to him when you meet him, but.
This was a creative way for her to reach out and do something. Now, she didn't say, hey, I'm a blind girl and I want to meet Justin Bieber, but unfortunately, that's kind of what captured people's attention. You know, it says right there, blind girl wants to meet Justin Bieber, and she made up a cool song. So I kind of wonder if Mr. Bieber will end up meeting her because of the publicity. You know, she's blind. It's the right thing to do. I should probably meet her. Or if he'll just continue to ignore the whole thing. But I do wish Jasmine luck.
And I don't want to see any spinoffs. We'll have people trying to do all sorts of crazy things for Lady Gaga next. Is that the next, you know, because if it's gone viral,
right,
somebody's always got to upsell it one more time.
Well, she is a good vocalist, so hey, maybe there's an ulterior motive and a plan here to do a duet or get herself the exposure. Who knows? Maybe this lady's sharper than we're giving
her
credit
for. That's
right.
I think that's smart planning.
Hidden marketing.
Yeah. That's what we have for you this round, folks. We invite you to stay tuned for our other cool segments and certainly join us on May 5th for Tech Chat 100. We're going to do something cool and special for you that Thursday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern. So you don't want to miss that.
Thanks for listening. See you in a couple of weeks.
The number you have reached has been disconnected.
Telephones have obviously changed a great deal in the last 135 years since the original conception. With phones in our pockets, cars, workplaces, and everywhere else, if the original designers of the telephone knew exactly how this stuff worked today, I don't think they know what to do with themselves.
Probably not.
I'm Patrick Perdue, and today I'm going to demonstrate an app for iOS called Acrobit's Softphone. This is an app you can get for $6.99 from the App Store, and it turns your iPhone, iPad, or iPod Touch into a SIP-compatible softphone. Now, before I go any further, I will say that there is a bit of geekery involved in this review. I'm going to try to keep that down to a minimum, but some things are just a little bit unavoidable. Now, you may be asking yourself, exactly what is a SIP phone? No, it's not a phone you use through a straw, although the concept is kind of amusing. This is a phone that uses an open protocol called SIP, which stands for Session Initiation Protocol. Try saying that 10 times fast.
Session Initiation Protocol. Session Initiation Protocol. Session Initiation
that's
protocol, session
cheating.
Initiation. Oh, sorry.
As I was saying, the SIP, or Session Initiation Protocol, is essentially an open standard that lets different types of voice over IP hardware and software talk to each other, either on the net or over local area network, or a combination of both. And of course, voice over IP technology is a bit of what you might call a telecom disruptor. More people are using technology like Skype to video conference and chat with their friends and associates all over the world instead of regular telephones or even cell phones. Lots of businesses are taking advantage of voice over IP technology to do fun stuff like keeping down costs for calls, allowing them to have people all over the world with access to their phone system, since with the internet, of course, nothing has to be centralized anymore. And, of course, the easiest ways to make such things happen, using something open, something that everyone knows and something that everyone can use. In this case, SIP. Now, if you're an IT-type person, you'll instantly understand the benefits of having a completely mobile device that can hook up to your phone system, whether it be at work or at home, which can provide much higher quality phone calls than you can get over, say, GSM or CDMA voice, for example.
Are we talking about cell phones?
Yeah, we're talking about cell phones. You know, they just don't really sound that good. They certainly get the job done, they're portable, they're certainly nice, but they just don't sound that great. But with something like Acrobit's Softphone, a bit of data, and a voice over IP provider that'll actually allow you to bring your own device, you can certainly get some very high quality audio out of this. And of course, if you have an iPod or an iPad, which aren't phones, you can use Acrobits to make and receive phone calls on these devices as well.
Just as a quick example, this is what you might sound like coming from your typical iPhone 4 on AT&T. It's kind of squished, it works, but it doesn't really sound all that wonderful.
And this is the same iPhone 4 coming to you from Acrobit's Softphone. As you can tell, it sounds quite a bit better. And it can actually get better than this, but we'll get to that later.
So I'm going to show you in kind of a broad sense what Acrobit's Softphone has to offer. I'm not going to spend too much time with the more advanced features, and there are plenty of them. This is a very configurable app. But I'll give you a good idea how it's laid out and demonstrate some of the features that I find particularly useful with this app. And, of course, we'll also talk about some of its downfalls. Yes, it does have them. Nothing is perfect, after all. So let's get started. I guess the first thing to do, naturally, is to launch the thing in question. So we're going to do that. I'm sitting in the folder that has the Acrobit Softphone in it.
Softphone, 3 new items.
There it is. So we're going to launch that.
PBX. PBX ready.
It said PBX ready, which basically just means that the profile I'm using, which is called PBX, you can name it whatever you like, is ready to make and receive phone calls. We can now proceed with our business, there were no errors, and everything's good. If there were registration errors, at this point it would have said something like PBX registration failed or registration error or something like that, so it will tell you if something's wrong before you try to do anything. In this case, I'm talking to an Asterisk server. Asterisk is an open source PBX, and the way I'm using this is I have all my phones routed to this PBX, and I have several different providers that I'm attached to, a couple of different PBXs and a couple of different providers for taking and making phone calls, so I have my phones all attached to the system so they can all have access to everything at once rather than connecting all my individual phones to all these different little providers. But enough of that, let's actually take a look at Acrobit's Softphone. Starting from the top left of the screen, we have the status.
PBX ready.
And that simply shows the name of the profile that you've selected and that it's ready to make and receive phone calls. One thing I'm going to say is that if you haven't used the screen for a few seconds, there's something kind of weird that makes it a little bit laggy. For example, I haven't touched it in a while, so let's go to the next element, which should be the keypad.
Keypad, heading.
And it took a little while to get there. But once you actually get moving on the screen, it's all right.
Settings, budget, number, text, 1, 2, 3.
For example, there we are on the keypad. And this is laid out like a standard phone keypad, of course, with 4 rows and 3 columns going through it.
2, 1.
Looks just like you might think.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, *0#.
And there you go. Now we're at the bottom of the screen, or pretty close to it.
Save as contact button.
The save as contact button, which of course is convenient. If you just enter a number and press the save as contact button, you can quickly add this to your contacts without dialing them first.
Call button.
And the call button, which you would expect to be right where it is, from the phone app, it's kind of at the sort of bottom center of the screen.
Delete button.
The delete button, of course, if you make a mistake.
Quick deal button.
And now we're at the very bottom of the screen with the quick dial button.
History, three items button.
History, which gives you incoming and outgoing calls.
Selected keypad button.
Keypad.
Contacts button.
And contacts. Now, if I'm not actually sitting here talking about it and moving quickly through the screen, it's a lot more responsive. But if you don't touch the screen for a couple of seconds, it slows down. I don't know why.
Delete, call, save, count, zero, start, 9, 8, 7.
See, it's a lot faster that way.
2, 1, number.
That's one thing that's kind of weird about it. But as you can see, it's not very daunting. Once you have everything set up, it's pretty straightforward. Let's make a sample phone call just to tell me for the fun of it. As I slowly dial the phone number on the touch screen.
0, 0.
Oh boy.
5, 5, 5, 8, 3, 5, 5, 5. Call button. 5, 5, 8.
Tell me.
Hey there, welcome to Tell Me. Main menu. Business search.
Weather.
Okay, weather.
Weather. Hang on for your weather.
No,
new Walmart.
I don't think I actually really want that, so I'll just hit the... And there you go.
Keypad, PBX ready.
Now, you may have noticed that VoiceOver got kind of quiet during that phone call, and that's also typical. I've tried a few programs like this, and they all seem to make VoiceOver get quiet during a phone call. I'm not quite sure why, but it's definitely not specific to this particular app. Just be careful about that. If you're like me with a bit of a hearing impairment, that's sometimes a bit of a problem. And now let's receive a call. I'm going to call myself from another extension on the same PBX.
Boris GS.
Now it's ringing. It said the name of the incoming caller. In this case, it's actually called Boris GS. It's a Grandstream phone, so that's what I called it. Now while this is ringing, press the answer button, which is at the not quite bottom left of the screen.
Ignore button.
Or the ignore button.
Answer button. Ignore
answer,
button. Reject button.
Ignore or reject. I'm not sure what the difference between ignore and reject is.
Ignore answer button.
So I'll press the answer button. And now if this is working, and it looks like it is, you should now be hearing me from a cheap Grandstream BT-101 voice-over IP phone. This is a piece of hardware. I think I paid about $30 for it, used a few years ago. It's not a great phone, but it does highlight one interesting feature of Acrobat Softphone, and that is the fact that it supports a codec called G722, which is a wideband codec, 16 kHz. This is quite nice if you're using a phone system and you have phones that support it. It'd be especially nice for conferencing, since you get twice the frequency response of a normal phone call, 16 kHz instead of 8 kHz. And while I'm on this phone call, I might as well show you exactly how the screen looks while you're on a call. Obviously, it changes from when you're not on a call. So, let's start from the top.
Boris GS.
And at the top, we have the name of the caller, which in this case is Boris GS.
0218.
That's the call duration.
Established.
That basically just says that it's there.
PBX.
And that's the name of the profile.
G722.
That shows you what codec you're using. If you're using standard phone codecs, it would probably say G711, or ULAW or ALAW, or G729 or GSM. It supports a few different codecs.
Main button. PBX ready. Back to call. Keypad heading.
If you press this button, this will actually take you to the main screen. Kind of like going back to the home screen on a phone while you're in a call. This actually takes you to the main screen of the program while you're in a call. You can toggle between the call screen and the main screen of the program. So let's press the back to call button.
Back to call.
And this will take us back to the screen that has the call information on it.
Boris GS. Main button.
And now after the main button, we have...
Mute button.
Mute button. That's pretty self-explanatory. It mutes the microphone.
Speaker button.
And there's the speaker button, turns on the speakerphone. There's also a setting in preferences that allows it to act a lot like the iPhone, as it normally does, at least when VoiceOver is running, and uses the proximity sensor to detect if it's away from your face or not, which will then activate speakerphone.
Keypad button.
And I should say that I really wish that the keypad were visible while you're in a call, by default. It's not, so you have to press the keypad, which will then make it visible again if you need to use key entry on a phone call.
Hold button.
Which uses the PBX hold function.
Record button.
There's a record. This thing allows you to record single or multi-channel audio files. This is actually kind of an interesting feature that I'll get into later.
Page 2 of 3.
Now this is interesting because this program, while you're on a call, is divided into 3 pages. You're in the middle by default, which you've just seen. If you go to the right, one page.
Page 1 of 3. Boris GS.
you're now in the keypad.
PBX.
You get to see all the same status information at the top of the screen, but you also get to see the keypad. Essentially, if you press the keypad button, it just puts focus to that page.
G720, 1, 2, 3, 4.
There's the keypad.
4.
So let's go to the last page.
Page 3 of 3, Boris GS.
This page allows you to see some of the geekier statistics of your phone call. For example, if you have any packet loss. No, I didn't actually try for that to happen. I really did get packet loss when I was talking about packet loss. Well, let's see if it says something about the packet loss.
Packet loss. 0%.
No? Okay, well, it either lies or all the packet loss was on the other end. So,
jitter.
There you go.
25 milliseconds. Volume boost. Microphone boost, 0%, adjustable.
This is kind of nice. It allows you to turn the microphone gain up and down if you're too quiet. And the slider next to it allows you to turn up the phone receiver volume, independent of everything else.
Playback boost, 0%, adjustable.
You can turn that up.
10%.
I am now 10% louder.
20%.
I am now 20% louder. Yes.
0%.
Yes. Got to be kind of careful with that, because if you turn it up too high, obviously really bad things happen.
Page 3 of 3.
So, I think I've pretty much seen the entire screen, so having done that, let's hang this phone call up.
Keypad, PBX ready.
And I forgot to mention, I guess I skipped over it, that the end call button is at the bottom center of the screen. I'm running out of time, but there are a few other things I want to mention. I said earlier that Acrobit's softphone has a call recorder built in, which it does, but it has some features that make it quite nice for, say, conducting phone interviews. One of them is that you can actually disable the recording beep. It'll give you a disclaimer about it and say that it's not necessarily legal. But if the other party is fully aware that he or she is being recorded, then that's not really a problem. It also has the ability to record both sides of a phone conversation to two channels of a stereo audio file. The nice thing about this, of course, is that you can very easily isolate one side of the phone call for further editing or mixing in with other things and make it sound pretty nice. It also has a built-in web server, so you can simply download any of the files you have on the phone using a regular web browser, so you don't have to go through iTunes or whatever. You can just turn on the web server, download your call logs and the recordings that go with them, and have a nice day. So I'm going to demonstrate, at least in a fashion, how this sounds. I made a call to my buddy in London, Andre Louis, and with his permission, I recorded what turned out to be an incredibly silly phone call. I apologize in advance for the silliness, well, sort of. But this will sort of demonstrate how this works. When you record in multi-channel mode, the way it's set up is you get yourself on the right channel and the remote party on the left. I'm not really sure why it's not the other way around, but I guess it doesn't really matter too much. So what I'm going to do is play a part of this recording with the channels panned full out, left and right, and then a little bit later on I'll collapse it to mono, which makes it a lot more listenable, and show you how things can be isolated if you need to do that sort of thing. So here is this incredibly silly recording.
Your call is important to us.
I don't
may
think
be
it actually
after
is.
Tomorrow.
This is not, no, this is not correct. No.
Oh.
No, I will not
okay.
answer. My call is not important. You should know that by now.
Because both sides of this call are on separate channels, I can actually process them separately.
Very sorry.
In post-production.
Okay.
Now it's in mono.
Now, does it really have to do that?
Yeah.
I don't think it really has to do that.
Sometimes, in a guy's life, it's necessary to go. Bang.
I don't agree.
Yay. Well, that's okay.
Right.
Okay, well, fine. I'll go like this instead.
Well, that would... You can do that. I can just kind of turn it down. I don't really want it anymore anyway. That's a nice thing.
And it's all fun for you.
No, it's not.
By the way, it's hard to sing off key, because I'm trying to sing unlike me.
Yeah, well, you'll have that, I guess. But yes, if you want to use this in a slightly more practical way than I did, it's a very nice feature to have, and one that I haven't seen in any other softphone like this. It's particularly fun if you're one of those people that enjoys playing with audio like I do. And even if you don't, it's still a good phone call recorder. There's one other feature I want to mention, and this is a big one. This app actually supports push. And the reason this is so significant is this is one of these deals where you have to keep a constant connection to your phone provider in order to take calls. What they've done to get around this is they use another remote server somewhere, which registers with your phone provider when you turn on push, and then when you close the program or put it in the background, depending on how you have it set up, when a call comes in, it'll send you a push alert, and you can slide to answer and then take the call, which is really cool because you can close it down completely and still have the ability to take phone calls and not use any battery power in the process. Of course, to register with this remote server, it has to hand out your password, but it's nice about it. It does use encryption, and it also expires after a couple of days. So if you do use this app with Push, it will tell you that your account has expired. All you have to do to get it back is to just simply relaunch Acrobat Softphone and then put it back in the background. And of course, this is a good thing because this means they're not holding on to people's passwords and being generally bad, and we certainly do like that. So to summarize, it's a very accessible SIP client for iOS. I haven't seen anything about it that isn't accessible, actually. Even one part where you have to reorder things on the screen just by dragging a couple of buttons around, that works fine. So if you have a SIP provider that allows you to bring your own device, like Vitality or VoIPO in the United States, Vonage doesn't unless you actually buy a Softphone plan on top of your existing plan. Or if you're in a business that uses SIP technology in the workplace for the phone system, I would definitely recommend this app. It works on 3G and Wi-Fi, so no matter where you are, assuming you have a good connection, you can stay connected to that wonderful phone system. So definitely give this a look if you're in the market for such a thing. It's Acrobits Softphone, A-C-R-O-B-I-T-S. The same company also makes several other SIP phone type things, which I don't know anything about. The one that we're playing with here is just simply called Softphone. It's advanced for the geeks and simple enough to use for everybody else. It's really quite a good combination. Reporting for Saratalk, I'm Patrick Perdue.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Saratalk. Visit us at www.saratalk.com. Send us an email at resources@saratalk.com or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.